family Nahmoudou, welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will discuss uterine cancer as June this year marks the inaugural Uterine Cancer Awareness Month. But first, hypertension or high blood pressure is a common condition that affects over 1 billion people worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. When people suffer from high blood pressure, the pressure of blood flowing through the blood vessels is consistently too high. Hypertension often has no symptoms and can cause serious health problems such as stroke and heart disease if untreated. WHO estimates that the prevalence of hypertension is highest in the African region, with about 46% of adults age 25 years and older being hypertensive, compared to 35% in the Americas and other high-income countries. Here is a story from VOA's George Atino in Mali, narrated by Zoe Liudaki.
Every morning after breakfast, Sekou Soumano takes his medication for high blood pressure. The 90-year-old senior citizen has now embarked on a salt-free diet. His family is following suit.
Oui, on est indien parce que depuis 2016.
I have been consulting doctors since 2016 for this issue. They have prescribed medication and a low-salt diet, so I can eat salt, but in small quantity. And at home, all our dishes are low in sodium because my family members also want to avoid hypertension.
Sekou Soumano nearly got a stroke due to hypertension. He never forgets.
That day I went to the Point G hospital because I almost had a stroke. The doctor was amazed that I could talk because I was in a critical condition.
High blood pressure is considered a silent killer. The World Health Organization says a large proportion of people with high blood pressure are unaware of their status. Sometimes they learn about it too late. This was the case with Amit Traoré.
One day, I had a severe headache. I went to bed, and when I woke up, my face was drooping. I was taken to the hospital. I was very scared, and that's the day I realized that I had high blood pressure. I was put on a salt-free diet for 4 months.
To create awareness as widely as possible, the Association of Hypertensive People, Tension Ton, organizes free consultations in the 6 districts of Bamako. Sheikh Doumbia is in charge of the Elderly Care Center. According to him, these free consultations have allowed many people to know their blood pressure numbers.
Hypertension is a problem in our country. Every day here at the hospital, I see at least 4 to 5 people with hypertension during consultations. It is often too late by the time people learn about their condition. It is true that old people are the most affected by high blood pressure, but it is also a problem for young people.
Some symptoms of high blood pressure include severe headaches and nosebleeds. While not everyone has access to treatment, these hospital-based consultation initiatives are an opportunity for some to be seen by a specialist for the first time.
We asked some listeners how aware they were about their blood pressure and what they did to keep hypertension at bay. Here are some reactions from Abuja, Nigeria.
120. Whenever I check my blood, if it's below that, my doctor is not happy. And when it's above that too, I'm asked to be very, very careful and to get down.
When I check my BP, it's very okay. So it's not much of a concern for me.
The normal something supposed to be 120, but my one was even over 200. But later I was able to calm the something because I have some product.
Yes, I look as if as I don't have any problem, my system is okay. I don't have anything that makes my blood to be high. That's why I don't bother to go and check my blood.
No, I don't do it regularly. It's just that if I'm sick and I go to the hospital, it's part of what they check, and I get to know.
I check my blood pressure every 2 months. I see my doctor and to see that I'm always on track.
What the step one can take, one, we need to take care of what we are consuming.
because
yeah, for especially for those who are fat like me, because of obesity, one has to engage in exercises. You watch your diet; it's very, very important. You must learn to reduce fatty food. They don't block your veins that take blood, flu blood through your heart. It's very, very important. And you take a lot of fruits too. It's very good. Especially your salt level must always be in checked.
Exercise is part of it because if one, we want to maintain good sound health, we need to exercise at least 10 minutes.
Sometimes there's the advice person to not to think much, and then if you have it, you buy medicine on it.
Most times in Nigeria, we like driving around. I like walking a lot. I walk a lot. So there was a time that when they took a test of my BP, the doctor said that my BP is the type of is athletic. So it's the type that athletes have. So I said, oh, I walk a lot. So he said, no wonder.
It's a concern because it's one of the secret killer of people. When your pressure, your blood pressure rises, it can lead to heart attack. And when it gets to that level, an individual cannot make it. I think checking your blood pressure is always very, very, very important.
Dr. Anzibert Rugakingira is a national coordinator for non-communicable diseases with the Ministry of Health in Tanzania. He tells us more about hypertension and how to prevent or manage it.
Hypertension, or in the other name, it's called high blood pressure, is a condition which can be stated as a pressure in the blood vessels which is higher than normal, and it's affects almost every part of the body, because as we know that blood flows in every part of the body, and if there is any abnormality in the pressure or in the volume of the blood, that's it affects almost all organs of the body. But the main organs which are highly affected are the kidneys, the eyes, the heart, the brain, which can also be also termed as a stroke. Hypertension does not have sign at any stage. So someone can have this condition for so long without expressing any sign or symptom. But when you signs develop, it means that you have gone somewhat too far, and you can also experience some complications. So we advocate also screening at least twice a year. At early stage, you can do lifestyle modification and control your blood pressure. But when complications come, then that's where the problem is. Systolic and diastolic are both important because that's a measurement of when the heart pumps in and pumps out the blood. But when you're having a diastolic measurement, which is even higher, the complications are they're much more severe compared to systolic. So the diastolic one need to be really controlled because it has more risk of complications compared to the systolic. You really need to be aware of the lifestyle changes in our settings, because we know that urbanization is taking over. The transport system allows you to move faster and without even walking. So the food supply is changing, so we are now having this fast food compared to the natural foods that we are having in those times. So you have to be physically active, taking a walk or just do some physical exercises at least 3 times a week. But you must also be, you know, that what you eat is what you become. So you really need to control your food. You need to know that you eat healthy food, and at least control the amount of salt, the amount of oil, the amount of sugar in your food, but also to know the good ways of like reducing your problem by using meditation techniques so that you can reduce depression. At least twice a year, make sure that you know your measurement of blood pressure, but also other measurements like your blood sugar, your weight, your height. That's very important because these non-communicable diseases, they really related to each other.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll look at the first Uterine Cancer Awareness Month. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back to Health Chat. June 2023 marks the inaugural Uterine Cancer Awareness Month globally. Uterine cancer is a cancer that develops inside a woman's womb, and experts say more than 90% of uterine cancers occur in the endometrium. Data show that over 400,000 people were diagnosed with uterine cancer around the world in 2020. According to the International Gynecologic Cancer Society, IGCS, the incidence of uterine cancer continues to increase by almost 2% per year in women younger than 50 and by 1% per year in older women. IGCS, in partnership with more than 25 global organizations, has announced the month of June as Uterine Cancer Awareness Month. For more insight, I spoke with Dr. Brian Slomovich, Director of Gynecologic Oncology at Mount Sinai Medical Center and Chair of the IGCS Uterine Cancer Awareness Month Initiative. Dr. Brian Slomovich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Uterine cancer is a topic that we don't hear often. I wanted to ask you, what would you say is the state of uterine cancer today, whether it's in the U.S. or globally?
Globally, in 2020, it was estimated that there was over 400,000 cases of endometrial cancer that was diagnosed. And this was around 3% of all cancers that were diagnosed. In addition, at that time, there was almost 100,000 deaths due to this disease. Now, in the United States in particular, it's the most common gynecologic cancer. It's much more common than ovarian cancer, much more common than cervical cancer. And a lot of times people recognize those as the big cancers. One of the reasons why it really hasn't been recognized as a cancer, or people don't know about it as well, is because we used to say that most women with endometrial cancer do not die from their disease and go on and live a long, healthy, productive life. We're learning, though, however, that's not the case. What we're learning is that while most cancers are decreasing in incidence, the number of cases of uterine cancer is actually increasing. Not only that, the number of cases are actually going to be higher. The number of deaths are going to be higher for endometrial cancer as they are for uterine cancer. So it represents an unmet need. It represents an area where we need to increase research. We need to increase education of our colleagues and our peers. We need to better inform our populations, the populations we serve, about this disease, so they can be aware of the early signs and symptoms. And finally, and you know, equally as importantly, we need to raise awareness with our politicians, with our philanthropists. We need to raise money, because how do you cure a disease? you put money together and you invest in research, you invest in education, and you invest in public awareness. Our initiative, this initiative about Uterine Cancer Awareness Month, don't get me wrong, this is about research, education, and letting our populations know about what we're doing.
That's fantastic, and we'll talk more about it. I wanted to ask you to kind of distinguish for us. You mentioned endometrial cancer and uterine cancer. So what is the difference?
So the uterus or the womb, the function is to hold a pregnancy. The uterus includes the muscle, and I don't need to remind women about the muscle because that's what you call cramping during labor, and they know about that, but also the inner lining, all the endometrium. Now, most cases of cancer of the uterus arise from the inner lining or the endometrium. However, about 4 to 5% actually arise from the muscle, which is called sarcomas. Sarcomas are tumors that arise from the muscle, and they could be very deadly as well. So to answer your question, uterine cancer encompasses everything, but the most common type of uterine cancer is endometrial cancer.
Let's go back to the data. You mentioned the fact that numbers are increasing, and the data show also that it is on the rise among Black women in particular. How and why? Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, and that's something that we've been trying to figure out. Now, originally, we thought that the cases in underrepresented populations, particularly Black women, part of it we thought was due to access to care. That's not the case. It's not. We understand that we're seeing these patients, they're being treated in academic centers, and we're happy about that. What we're learning, however, is that the biology of this disease is different. There are more different types of genetic mutations, which make them more aggressive type of cancers. Therefore, these aggressive type of cancers, what we're learning, increases the deaths due to this disease. Black women are twice as likely to die from endometrial cancer than any other population. So we need to do better. And in to do better, we need to do a couple of things. Number one, we need to know what the biological differences are. Number two, we need to determine if our current therapies that we offer are correct across all patients. Because there's a difference in biology, maybe we need to come up with different treatment options to better treat those patients, really regardless of race, but race is one of those factors. Maybe we need different drugs. And three, we need to figure out why, with our current treatment options, are certain populations, including Black women, not responding to therapy as much as we would like. Other reasons in general for the increase in endometrial cancer, obesity. We're in a population where there's a I don't want to call it McDonald's, but a McDonald's or Burger King or fast food restaurant in every corner. That's not doing good for our obesity pandemic. And obesity, fat tissue, adipose tissue, which we all have, increases the estrogen levels in the body. And it's that increased estrogen which stimulates the lining of the uterus, which causes cancer.
So what are the signs and symptoms to be aware of when it comes to uterine cancer?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And when we're talking about the signs and symptoms, we're fortunate. It's not like ovarian cancer, which it presents an advanced stage. For uterine cancer, we often see postmenopausal bleeding in our patients that are postmenopausal. We do see this disease happening in premenopausal women. So then the answer there is abnormal uterine bleeding, heavy, heavy, heavy periods or bleeding in between periods, pelvic cramping, pelvic pain, pap smears. Pap smears, we know, are decrease the incidence of cervical cancer, but they can also identify endometrial cancers. So it's important to do PAPs for a lot of different reasons. Bladder pressure, bladder pain, advanced stage disease, may have abdominal pain, cough. But the big ones are postmenopausal bleeding and abnormal bleeding.
Are there some risk factors?
In addition to race, other risk factors include obesity, diabetes. There are some hereditary causes, genetic causes of endometrial cancer, something called Lynch syndrome, which women who have Lynch syndrome have an increased risk of developing endometrial cancer. Polycystic ovary disease. But those are just some of them. But you know, I'd say obesity is a big one.
So Dr. Brian, when women go to see their doctors, what questions should they ask? First, when they are concerned about uterine cancer, and second, when they just received a diagnosis?
So the key there is when they go to the doctor, what they ask. The key is if they have met postmenopausal bleeding, don't wait for their annual exam that's going to be in 3 or 4 or 6 months.
go to the doctor sooner. And then the doctor's basically going to say, we need to do a biopsy. Endometrial cancer is a tissue diagnosis. So the biopsies can be done right there in the office with an endometrial biopsy, or they can be done through a procedure called a DNC hysteroscopy. Endometrial biopsies are a blind procedure, basically sticking a straw into the uterus and taking some tissue, or hysteroscopy is done under direct visualization. It's the pathologist that'll then tell us if it's a diagnosis or not. If it's a cancer, then the first step is to talk to the patient, obviously, explain to them that it is very treatable in a lot of women, but it needs to be treated seriously. We then do imaging, and if the imaging's all clear, then we go forward with a hysterectomy. Now, fortunately, we're doing a lot of these minimally invasive with the robotics, so patients are doing much, much, much better, getting out of the hospitals the same day, recovering a lot quicker.
How is the International Gynecologic Cancer Society working with its global partners to improve prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of uterine cancer?
The IGCS is an inclusive group, International Gynecologic Cancer Society. We're not unilaterally promoting this. What we're doing is we're getting all of our teammates. We're getting all of our partners. We're getting other physician subspecialty groups like the GOG, which leads all the clinical trials in the U.S. We're getting the SGO, other groups throughout Europe, throughout Asia, throughout Africa, to get on board. We're also getting advocacy groups, the patient groups like SHARE, like others that really promote awareness and talk to our constituents about that. And this is being led through the IGCS because we're the right organization to do it, bring these groups together. And there's been a consensus. I'm the chair of our initiative. When we talk to another group about it, there isn't should we do it or not. It's like, yes, what should we do and then how can we do it?
IGCS and partners have announced the month of June as the inaugural Uterine Cancer Awareness Month. You mentioned it earlier. Why was it important to have an awareness month?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, why do we need to do this? For a couple of reasons. In general, people need to know about this disease. As I mentioned, it is the most common gynecologic cancer. There are, you know, hundreds of thousands of women worldwide who get this cancer. So we need to make it a global initiative to make people more aware. And what's the advantage of that? If it was a disease that we couldn't affect the outcome, then, you know, we want to make people aware. But endometrial cancer is not like that. If we educate people on prevention, decrease weight. If we educate people on the early signs and symptoms, go to your doctor as soon as possible. What we feel and what I'm certain of is that we will decrease the number of deaths due to this disease because people are going to become more aware and they're going to go to their doctor on their first episode of bleeding, not allowing the disease, the nasty disease, to spread. And how are we going to do that? Through education. How do we educate people? Through awareness months. Peach is the color of Uterine Cancer Awareness Month. It's a year-wide educational opportunity, research opportunity, but we're committed to June to raising the awareness. We want it to be a sustainable initiative. We want it to happen every year. And the buy-in that we've had, the commitment we've had to groups has really been incredible. And there's a lot of interest there. And we understand there's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. And we support those, particularly the women's cancers. We support those. But we did feel that it's important that we have our own month.
So what is the message for this first Uterine Cancer Awareness Month?
That's a really great question. I think the first thing you need to do to solve a problem is you need to define what the problem is. So this first month is we're going to help to make people aware that there is a disease called uterine cancer. We're going to define the differences between sarcoma and define the differences between endometrial cancer. We're going to tell people what funding there is thus far for this disease. We're going to tell people about the current research. We're going to make communities aware that they need to see their doctor. And then we're going to come up with goals and accomplish those goals. I'm a big believer in not overpromising. So I think if we could educate and do things like that the first year, we're going to gain that momentum to eventually make it as impactful as a month as we see in breast cancer, prostate cancer awareness month, lung cancer awareness month, to let people know about prevention, to make sure they see their doctor as soon as they have these symptoms, and to make sure that they get the right treatments. Just like anything, you know, sometimes some areas of the country, they get certain treatments. Other areas of the world, they get other treatments. We need to standardize the best treatment for all of our patients, whether that be in the suburbs of
of the United States or whether they be in a low middle income country in the Bahamas or throughout Africa.
What does this initiative mean in the larger sphere of women's health?
Being the most common gynecologic malignancy, knowing that women's cancers traditionally have been underfunded and underrecognized by government authorities, I'm just being honest, we need to increase the awareness. I think we're gonna realize that, hey, it's not only heart disease, it's not only breast cancer, it's not only other cancers that mostly affect women. Uterine cancer's on that list, and it's pretty high on that list because it's a preventable death, especially if someone understands the risk factors. You know, especially, for example, if people are given, if people who are qualifying for food stamps, if they're not allowed to eat fatty foods because we don't want them to get uterine cancer. You know, things like that. Better education leads to more awareness. More awareness leads to lifestyle changes. Lifestyle changes lead to prevention and decreased deaths due to this disease.
What about in communities in low and middle income countries that do not have access to resources? What can be done?
One of the initiatives within the IGS is something called the ECHO Initiative. That's where we actually have tumor boards. You know, sometimes doctors go to different regions, but when we can't do that, we have tumor boards with regions throughout the country, the world. And I'm involved with several of these sessions where the seasoned physicians, the people who could do anything in any setting, meet and discuss cases with the local physicians to say, okay, maybe you can't do things robotically, but you could do the same thing with an open incision and have the same outcomes. Using the most of what the resources they have available to come up with the best treatment options. And truthfully, I've learned a lot in this process because sometimes I'll say something and they'll be like, wait a minute, Brian, wait, we don't have that. So, you know, we need to learn what some of the LMICs have and we need to adjust based on that.
And before we wrap, you talked about how collaboration is important. Who needs to play a part?
You know, that's a great point. And to my point earlier, this is an inclusive initiative. We want people to own this. You know, we have a package on our website that people can take, bring to their local newspapers and say, this is something that I'm doing. This is not trademark. This isn't an IGCS initiative. This is a world initiative that we're leading. So by sharing that, I mean, how often do you go to, you know, a company and say, here, use my slides. Use our slides, use our banners. It's not marketed towards us. Use the information to help disseminate this information. Take ownership in what you're doing. So, the state society that's doing it, we don't want them to say it's an IGCS initiative. We want them to say it's our initiative that was coordinated by the IGCS, but this is what we're doing to help the women in our community live longer. We need this deck. We need this information, not only to go to the traditional patient advocacy groups. We need to go to churches, community centers. We need to relay this information because one thing, Lenore, that we haven't talked about is the fear that some diverse populations have towards medical care. They don't want to go to the big bag university because they're afraid of white coats, right? We have to overcome that barrier. You know, we want women to live longer. We need to, for them to get the best care. Getting the best care means going to subspecialty doctors who want them to live longer. And we need to overcome the anxieties associated with going to those centers.
That was Dr. Brian Slomovich, chair of the International Gynecologic Cancer Society Uterine Cancer Awareness Month Initiative. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news, medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Modu in Washington, with producer Mukbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.